And now it's time for the newest edition of Sonoran Arcana, our monthly excursion into the depths of Arizona food with Phoenix New Times food critic Chris Malloy. This month, that took our co-host Lauren Gilger to the Old Town Farmers Market in Scottsdale and Karen Bedell's booth there, which is full of things that are scavenged from the Sonoran Desert.
So we are at the Old Town Farmers Market in Scottsdale. It's a beautiful Saturday morning, but who are we going to see?
So we are going to see Sonoran Scavengers, which is a new vendor here, and they sell some interesting products that come from a lot of the ingredients we've been discussing throughout the past few months in this series, including wolfberry jam, some interesting Palo Verde flour, mesquite flour, stuff like that. And it's going to be really cool to see what they have today.
Sonoran Scavengers, here's the booth, okay.
How are you doing, Karen?
Good, how are you?
This is Lauren.
Lauren Gilger.
Nice to meet you.
And you are the one behind all of this?
I'm the one who started Sonoran Scavengers.
Okay, this is a table full of jams and jellies and stuff like that, preserves, right? And then what's over here?
Over here, we have some dried prickly pear fruit. We have some dried wolfberries.
These are like powders down here. Prickly pear powder? What is that?
When we take the jelly or the juice for the prickly pear jelly, we have the pulp left. So we dry it, we grind the fruit. We have the fruit concentrate for the fruit powder. And then we take it and grind the seeds for the prickly pear flour.
So you have flour and then a powder and then the jam. So you use everything.
Every single part of it. We try to use every part of everything we do.
How did you begin scavenging and then making it into stuff?
I have been scavenging in the wild like most of my life. I started in Colorado. When I came to Arizona, nothing was the same. So it was kind of a slow learning process. I really started with the mesquite. And then built from there.
So what makes you want to do that? How did you get into it? Like, as a child, you were doing this?
As a child, we were doing this. I grew up in a small town. We didn't have a doctor. We had a nurse. But she was also an herbalist. So you might get, medicine. Chances are you're going to get a plant to fix it.
So that was sort of the roots of it. But now you make it into tasty things as well.
So bringing it into an edible level was totally different for me when I first started doing it. But I heard about the mesquite milling down in Tucson with Desert Harvesters. Had to try it. Funny enough, I didn't particularly care for this taste of the mesquite flour. But I'm like, okay, there's got to be something. So I started with the Palo Verde. And then it was the prickly pear. And then it just kept going and going and going.
Now this is your livelihood?
This is my livelihood at this point.
Chris, how did you hear about this? I mean, so Chris has been doing this series all year, right? Like, you've been looking at all of these sort of native ingredients, the way chefs are using them, the way they're being used in the culinary scene here. This is slightly different, but how did you find out about this?
The way I found out about it was I came down to the market one Saturday to get a porchetta sandwich from across the way, and I walked by and I saw some wolfberry jam, and I said, whoa, what's going on over here? So I kind of waltzed in and met Karen and just kind of tasted a few of the products, saw some of the crackers, and said, this is a story.
So walk us through like a scavenging day. Like, do you do this in your backyard? Or are you going out and hiking? How do you find all this stuff?
So I live in Buckeye. My backyard opens up to about a few thousand acres of farmland, and then we get into the Sonoran Preserve. So it goes from us all the way to Gila Bend is wide open. So I have lots of room to harvest. And we'll get up early, especially on like mesquite and Palo Verde, because it's the beginning. It's 110, 120 that day. We're out there at 4:30. As soon as that sun is in the sky, we're out harvesting. And we'll just keep going as long as we can keep going until it's too hot. And what I've done is I've developed a good relationship with a lot of our local farmers. So what is to their wasteland, which is their desert land, I'm permitted to go and harvest there.
And you said you're sort of at the end of the season, right?
Right. So how is it going to change at all with the winter coming? I feel like a lot of the stuff kind of pops in the summer, the fall. You get it jammed up. Do things slow down for the winter?
Absolutely not. So the wolfberries are just starting to come back. I saw my first full wolfberry bush last Sunday. And then all the greens are coming. Your London Rocket, your different wild greens are starting to pop up.
That's cool. I mean, when you look at the totality of the food system, you have certain producers, people raising animals, people growing plants. I think that this, not only in using all of that prickly pear, I think you're adding value in a lot of different ways. I mean, going onto lands that aren't being used and finding edible products, I think that's, kind of creating value where there's nothing.
Absolutely it is. Many of the things, the amaranth is one of my favorite examples, which is this right here. Farmers hate it. They can't wait for me to come get this off the side of their field. But by the same token, it makes an amazing flour. It's really nutritious. It's the same amaranth, basically, as you'd buy in the health food store.
So there's like a sustainability element here, which is a kind of a theme I think that's come up in this series with Chris a lot, like finding these things that otherwise are just going to be thrown away or ripped up or ignored.
Yes, absolutely. If you think about the amount, I mean, the hundreds of pounds, millions of pounds of mesquite beans we throw away in this state every year, that's flour. That's a high protein and nutritious flour.
Does it break your heart a little bit?
Yeah, there's part of that. I mean, it just seems like such a waste. And Palo Verde, the same thing. I mean, we pay people to come clean this stuff up, but we could be feeding our family.
Do you want to taste some of this, Chris? Like, can we try it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we've got to.
Let's try the mesquite.
So we take the beans and we make them into a tea.
This is almost like honey textured here.
Yes.
Wow. That's really good. It tastes like a sort of savory honey.
Yeah, definitely. It has some dusky notes that you don't get with honey, I think. Like a little closer to the earth.
So why do you think this stuff is sort of undervalued or like rare, like when it's literally all around us all the time?
I think most people just don't even know it's there. I think it's people are starting to take notice of what's there. But I think at some point years ago, people saw it as really weird to go out and pick the weeds. I mean, you think about in the 60s, the people eating the dandelions, everybody thought they were nuts, right? But no, they were probably the start of what this is.
Chris, how do you think this sort of fits into the bigger picture here with what you're looking at, this defining of the native food scene here?
There's a few different elements to it, I think. I think one, it's available beyond, you know, the fancy kitchen where the entrees are in the 20s and 30s. Like, you could get a lot of these products here and incorporate them into your own cooking. And that's pretty exciting to be able to, you know, pick up your lettuce, your onions, your garlic, and then your Palo Verde flour, your mesquite flour, and incorporate that into your cooking. I think you can connect with the place you live in a little more powerfully, being able to do something like that. And I think it just also kind of represents how, since I've really turned my eye onto these kinds of foods, it's trickled down a little bit, I think. It's becoming a little bit more common. It's not ubiquitous. It's not all over the place. Like, you don't see this stuff at AJ's or Fry's, but I think people are getting turned on to these ingredients a little bit, and it's pretty exciting. And I'm glad we have people like Karen who are here to spread some knowledge and some great flavors.
Karen, Chris, thank you both so much.
Thanks a lot, Lauren.
Thank you.
That's our co-host Lauren Gilger talking to Phoenix New Times food critic Chris Malloy and Sonoran Scavengers Karen Bedell for our November edition of Sonoran Arcana. If you'd like to see some photos of Karen's offbeat products or read Chris's full story, you can do so at theshow.kjzz.org.